This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Kicking off hour two here. Money Moves on a Tuesday. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. Live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to dive into the Mountain West Conference. Mountain West Network executive producer and radio analyst for the Air Force Falcons, Jesse Kurtz, is going to join the program. We will also continue our Money Moves College Football Top 25 this hour. Almost to the top five. We're hitting number six and number seven today.
We are. Very good.
I thought that you might say more there because you told me in the commercial break you had something to say.
Well, I'm trying to calm myself down, trying not to get too angry, okay?
Because
I don't want to be angry. Well, certain things. First off, actually, many things. First, I was going through Bo Nix's game log and just started seeing red because I just don't think he's good. Second, a certain local attraction that may or may not cost $50 to get into is moving my dates around here, as you well know, and then charging me an extra $30. I'm not really happy about that. And then Dustin Sweetelson, who is, by the way, we were talking about names during the break, and you can't give yourself a name. Neither can you give yourself a moniker of sorts. He has named this the Summer of Swede because he's on all the different shows on the Vegas Stats and Information Network. You can't say that.
You can't say that by yourself.
Yes, correct. We have to name it. You cannot do it. And then he tweets me and says, the way JVT is talking about Daniel Jones has me thinking, and he puts a screenshot of Anthony Richardson, comeback player of the year at 100-1. He can't win. We can't. We can't do this again this year, okay? Stop. They have told us that you can't come back from being bad at your job. That is period, point blank, none. So when I'm eventually right about Daniel Jones, and then Anthony Richardson does come in to play some games and ultimately looks pretty good, because I haven't given up on GVO, I don't want to have this conversation again. Because
he could be coming back from the orbital fracture.
Now that's a fair rebuttal.
Yeah.
That's actually a very fair rebuttal. Would the voters actually view it as such? Because while he did get injured last year, the reason why he did not play was because he stunk. But when Daniel Jones was injured, he did not play because he was injured.
Because he's injured.
Mm. That's pretty good. That's not bad.
I'm an idea man.
Did they ever give us the poundage on that resistance band that he was using? That had to have been like 100 pounds. Because that's what was happening. He was using a resistance band, and whatever it was on, snap, broke, whatever, and then hit him in the face, and that's what broke his orbital bone.
But it wasn't it a body weight one?
So that's what I'm saying. The resistance must have been very strong. Because he's a very strong person.
You would imagine. But I just still think that's a crazy thing to have happen. Anyway, it's just a total freak injury.
I would just say at this point right now that if he were to get into the lineup, the AFC South should be put on watch, and potentially the Tennessee Titans should have much fear in their hearts.
Which is where we will dive into our NFL training camp tour.
Join Stormy and JVT as they go on the Money Moves NFL training camp tour.
All this AFC South talk, we're not talking about a team that's about to double their win total, if not more, coming into this year. The Tennessee Titans, 3-14 each of the last 2 years, missed the postseason in four straight. Gone is Brian Callahan. In steps former 49ers defensive coordinator Robert Saleh, his second chance at being a head coach, defensive-minded head coach. So you bring in an offensive guy that can develop quarterbacks and Brian Daboll to run the offensive side of things. Will it work for Cam Ward and help him take the next step? Because we certainly saw, I think it's fair to say, the back half of the season, several flashes, several moments of what he could be, but throughout the entirety of the season, a lot of rookie mistakes in an offense that was one of the worst in the entire National Football League.
Yeah, pretty much. And so that's what the question is. Will he be able to kind of string this together? I'm kind of in, I think you are too, on what Cam Ward can potentially be. And so to push up my glasses and go with the, well, actually, as we look through the profile, right? That should be a segment, by the way. Write that down.
I thought that was specifically the Marcel Reed article, but it's all.
That would be a good football bit, right? Every week we can do it. Well, actually, we can go through negative losses, and see what transpired. But sifting through all of it, I will hang my desperation and my hat on one thing for Cam Ward. There's a lot of positives. On the dropbacks in which he was kept clean, 63.1% of his dropbacks last year, he completed 67% of his passes. He threw for 2,350 yards, threw 11 touchdowns to 3 interceptions, and had a turnover-worthy play rate under 3%. So, in other words, took care of the football, completed a high rate of passes, and graded out his highest in almost every single facet where you can break down these throws when he was kept clean. Now, obviously, football is a violent game and a crazy game. He's not always going to be kept clean, but I think the whole point is here, when he is given time to work, he can be a pretty good quarterback. And I think that is, if you're Dable, what you're really banking on, trying to improve the fact that you want to get that pressure rate down with his offensive line and the pass protection. You want to give him some easier throws to make, give him more talent at wide receiver, which they did in the NFL draft. And I think all of these things equate to Cam Ward taking a step forward in a better system with some better talent around him next year.
So let's see if the offensive line does their job, because Dan Moore at left tackle really struggled, gave up 13.5 sacks and 78 pressures. He's going to be back at left tackle again, but they did add former Bengal, Cordell Volson, Austin Schulman, new position at center. I do like Pierre Skronsky at left guard, J.C. Latham, former first-round pick, too. Like, they have good pieces. Can it all come together, and can more specifically play better at the most important position on the offensive line? That's going to be a critical piece of this. But you mentioned the talent that they bring in. You get a premium first round pick in Carnell Tate from Ohio State. You sign Wandale Robinson, who's free agent from the Giants, who Dable obviously has great experience with. Calvin Ridley, who was injured in November, he's going to come back. Alec Iomanner, I think, too, had a pretty solid rookie season for what he is. So a lot of pieces that are coming together. You do lose Chig Okonkwo, which stinks because he was your leading pass catcher last year, but they believe in Gunnar Helm coming up behind him as well at the tight end position. I kind of like Tajay Spears, too. I know we didn't see a ton from him in the run game last year behind Tony Pollard, but as a pass catcher, he was really effective. So if he can kind of put it together and they have a little bit more of a 1-2 punch in the run game, I think that could be helpful. There's a lot of reasons, I think, to believe that this offense will be better, and it's hard not to be when you average 16 points per game and only two teams in the entire league were worse than you. But to give you some numbers for the way that Cam Ward improved last year, completions were up. So from the first 10 weeks to the last 7 weeks, okay, let's separate it there, because there was kind of, you like to say, a clear line of demarcation. 14.3 points per game the first 10 weeks, the offense average up to 20.1 the last seven. Completions were up from 58% to 63%. Touchdown interception ratio, 6 touchdowns, 12 picks to 11-2, and the passer rating up from 73.8 to 90.5. So, like, all of those metrics lead you to believe that there's going to be positivity. And then you bring in a head coach who is a defensive-minded guy, and they brought in a ton of new defensive talent, too. By the way, the pass rush was actually pretty good for them, considering how many issues they did have on defense. So the 9th highest sack rate, added Keldrick Falk in the first round from Auburn, stack him next to Jeffrey Simmons. John Franklin Myers comes over from Denver, Jermaine Johnson from the Jets, Jacob Martin from Washington. Like, they bring in names that you know in positions that are important, and reloaded their secondary.
Yes, they did. You did all that.
Sorry.
No, yeah. You're right. No, I think you're right. I mean, these are all good reasons why we kind of like what they did. I mean, this is a really strong offseason for them. A lot of people pointed them as big winners because of the additions on the coaching staff and what they brought in, both draft, free agency, and otherwise. So I think there's a reason to believe in this team. I think now the question becomes, okay, so how do you believe in them? What do you play? I think there's a couple ways you can potentially look at this. So what I was interested in, especially if you're in a market like with DraftKings, one of the interesting markets that I saw pop up was the more wins than market, which I think is pretty fun. So it's every single team, which team you're going to have more wins than. Because part of my thinking was, all right, you can play them to finish third in the AFC South, for example, which is a plus price. But what if something catastrophic happens, let's say, to like Houston, and injuries hit them, and the Titans by default finish second, but everybody's got like 7 wins, okay? So one of the things I like, the Titans have more wins than the Colts, plus 180, right? If you're somebody like me that doesn't think the Colts are going to be particularly great but also believe in the Tennessee Titans, you could do that. I think there's a lot of different ways to play this. Over the win total, I think, is certainly a possibility. But I think trying to target Tennessee to have some success against some of these, we'll call them comparable teams, like the Colts in that nexus, the Giants, for example. You know, if you're not somebody like me that's kind of lukewarm on what the Giants could be with Harbaugh there, that's, I think, a unique way to play this thing. But look, they're 8-1 to win the division. I don't know if they're really going to compete for the top of the division. I think 9-10 wins is probably going to win this. Maybe if everything hits perfectly, they can. We've seen crazier things in the NFL. But that dynamic at the bottom between Indy and Tennessee, I think, is more volatile than the market thinks it is. And them finishing ahead of them is one way that I wanted to target this to bring this back to what we were opening up with the Colts.
For this division, obviously, as you saw those win totals up there, it's one win kind of separates each line with the market thinking that the Houston Texans are the top team. I kind of feel it's a haves and have-nots a little bit with the top two compared to the bottom two. How do you see it?
In the sense of?
Like, I think that the Texans and Jags are your contenders for the division, and then the Colts and Titans are. Can they get to 7 or 8 wins?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I mean, is there a universe in which, like, we talked about the Jags, like, you know, what if I'm right and they're not that good, and what if we're both right that C.J. Stroud is just such an albatross on the necks of this defense that drags them even down to 9 wins, and could the Titans or the Colts just sneak in there by that regard? But I'm generally with you. Those are all obviously realities that could happen, but if you're simulating it 1,000 times, I would be surprised, you know, if these Texans, Jaguars 1 and 2 in some sort of fashion are just winning the division, one of those two, is not a vast majority of those outcomes.
I am partial to the Jags this season, as you know well. I'm pretty high on what Trevor Lawrence can do in year two under Liam Cohen. I like them over their win total. I like them plus 245 to win the division. And a few others do in the NFL betting guide. If you want to go check that out, it is out officially now. And go to VSiN.com/subscribe if you want the last couple days available of this football season special. We've got a deal going on right now, $175. You get unlimited access to everything we do with the network, as well as the NFL betting guide, the college football betting guide that we discussed with Adam Burke earlier. That comes out next week. The guides, though, aren't sold a la carte. You only get them if you're a VSiN Pro subscriber. So head over to VSiN.com/subscribe now if you want to get in there. And to look at the guide again, we mentioned this earlier when discussing how teams see Indy right now. Only 2 people of the 23 analysts surveyed even had the Colts as a playoff team. Oh. Nobody had them winning the division. It was Steve Mackinnon and Polly Howard. Those were your 2. Okay, we're going to step aside here on Money Moves.
Fools.
When we come back from the NFL back to college football, Jesse Kurtz, my former boss from my first job ever out of college, is
Applebee's?
All in. No, that was in college. Get it right. The Mountain West Network is going to join us coming up next.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. VSiN Pro gives you access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The sports calendar never stops, and the Sharp plays covering it all. They've been winning for 15 straight years. All of it documented, logs posted publicly over at sharpplays.com, and we know that kind of transparency can be rare in the industry. When the Sharp plays moves, sportsbooks take notice. Check out the advanced AI, trusted insider intel, and a place that finds value before numbers shift. You can start winning with them today over at sharpplays.com. That's sharpplays.com. And speaking of the calendar never stopping, I feel like it's always football season. Like, it is a 365, 24/7 type of a sport, especially in the NFL, but in college football as well. And now that we have had media days getting underway across the country, right now, obviously the Big Ten getting underway out there in Chicago, but over the last couple weeks, we've seen the Big 12, the Mountain West, which is a team that you wrote up, same with the SEC. And we're going to talk some Mountain West football here. This is a conference that has been near and dear to both of our hearts for a long time, obviously, with our ties to Las Vegas, UNLV. I'm a San Diego State alum. My first job out of college was with the Mountain West. And this is a league now that looks very, very different in 2026. We see Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, SDSU, Utah State, all out of the league now, but in comes a few newcomers.
Traitorous program.
North Dakota State. I blame SDSU for all of this, by the way. North Dakota State, UTEP, and Northern Illinois come in. But a big reason why, and we're hoping to connect with Jesse Kurtz in a moment, who's the executive producer over the Mountain West Network. He also calls on the radio Air Force football games each and every weekend in the football season. A big reason why we wanted to have Jesse on was actually because of you, because you think that this Air Force Falcons team is very intriguing in 2026.
Intriguing is one way to put it. I think that this is an Air Force team that there's two, we'll call them dark horses in the Mountain West. I think it's Hawaii and I think it's Air Force. Air Force last year, if you look at it, statistically was one of the most efficient offenses in the country. We're not talking about the Mountain West. They were really held down by a defense that gave up over 30 points per game and was just an absolute sieve. They didn't really have a chance. So if you can fix some of those issues, and they've got a lot of continuity, they bring in a new defensive coordinator. I think in a conference, because this is part of our argument yesterday, and I think it's a good thing why we wanted to bring this up too, because you think there's a potential college football playoff team in here, is that I think any one of these 4 to 5 teams, if you were to tell me they won the conference, I would not be surprised. And Air Force is amongst them.
Okay. This is the defense, to your point, couldn't get much worse. And because of how much they bring back, that always kind of raises the question in my mind of, okay, are they actually going to get better, or are you just bringing back the same bad defense?
Yeah, and so I wrote about this, how bad it was. One of the changes that maybe could make a difference with a roster that's bringing back a lot of continuity is they do bring in Steve Russ, defense coordinator, most recently served in the same role at UAB, defensive coordinator 2014 to 2017 in Air Force. So maybe a guy that's worked with Calhoun is going to be something that can improve this unit.
Well, Jesse is with us now, and so curious, Jesse, your opinion. As we're talking about your Air Force Falcons, thank you for joining us. Do you believe that the defense can get better considering how good the offense was and all that they're bringing back, including their starting quarterback?
I don't think there's any question that the defense will be better. And I think you can look at last year for proof of that. From the first 6 games, statistically, Air Force had one of the worst defenses in America. And there's no getting around that. The last 6 games, the defense gave up just about half the amount of points. And that was really a product of a lot of the young guys that were forced into starting roles or significant playing roles started getting their feet underneath them. And I think they proved at the back half of the season that they can be pretty good. Most, if not all, of those guys are back. The linebacking core is as veteran-rich as Air Force has had, with Blake Fletcher leading the way, Isaac Hubert, Dallas Daly. The secondary, which was the trial by fire last year, will have all kinds of experience because of that trial by fire. The only part that is a question mark, Stormy, on defense for me is the front 3, front 4. Brand new group. So long as that group can get up to speed and be pretty serviceable, I think this defense will continue to make the improvements that it made midway through the year last year on into this year.
And Jesse, do you think that you're going to get a pretty similar line of production from this offense? Because this is one of the most efficient units in the country last year. Because if you put these two things together, this is why we wanted to have you on too. I think this is a potential conference winner that we're not talking about in Air Force.
So I'll answer the first part. Absolutely. The offense under Mike Thiessen for the last 20 years has been an absolute go. It has rarely been a worry for Troy Calhoun or Falcon fans. And we can talk about Liam Zarka, the quarterback, at length here. He is an X factor. He is one of those guys that you could put him in the category of some of the all-time greats when it comes to talent. He's got a long way to go. He's only played 8 games in his career. But what he did in those 8 games, that sample size projects pretty heavily to him being really, really good and a really accomplished quarterback in this offense and in this program. As it relates to, can this team compete for a conference championship? I don't think there's any question about that. Do I think they're one of the favorites, in quotes? Probably not. But given you have a starting quarterback that is as accomplished as Liam Zarka is coming back, a defense that has the experience that it comes back, and the weapons that are around Liam Zarka. And then, oh, by the way, you play 7 games at home, 5 games on the road. You've got some of the heavy hitters in this league coming to Falcon Stadium, whether it be UNLV, North Dakota State. You don't play Hawaii. And the last game of the season is a trip to New Mexico. There's a chance you might be going to Albuquerque the weekend after Thanksgiving with a shot to play into a Mountain West championship game. I think this is a major bounce back year for the Falcons.
Yeah, I think looking at their win total at only 6.5, 7.5, given all of what you've laid out and their schedule, that's certainly an angle and some way to look for those of our listeners. As far as the top of the conference goes right now, with Boise State, which appears to be UNLV's kryptonite in the Mountain West title game the last few years, with them officially out of the conference, I think a lot of people automatically look at the Mountain West and say, okay, UNLV, Dan Mullen, this is your year and your chance to show us what you've got. But New Mexico seems pretty intriguing. North Dakota State obviously makes the step up from being an FCS power. How do you see the top of the conference this year?
I think you used the operative phrase there when you talk about UNLV. Show me what you got. Because we all think that UNLV probably is the top team in the league on paper. But it is a show me what you got. There's a lot of new with that program. They might be even better than they've been in the last 3 years when they've made it to a Mountain West championship game. We don't know until we see it. But I'm not betting against Dan Mullen, given his track record and what he has built at UNLV. So if you're asking me who I think the best team right now in the Mountain West, it's probably UNLV. But New Mexico returns some of the most production in the country, certainly in the Mountain West, and they were very good last year. They had an argument right up to the end that they should have been in the Mountain West championship game. Quarterback back, defensive player of the year back, a really good wealth of running backs back. Oh, by the way, Troy Omire, the UNLV wide receiver, now he's at New Mexico. So Jason Eck has done a really good job of, one, building that program in 1 year, but then fortifying that and keeping guys in that program to elevate them to a spot where they're right there. They're a very talented team. I don't think you can sleep on Hawaii. Micah Alejado is as good as there is in the league running an offense. They run a obviously very unique offense that is tough to stop if you don't see it and you don't have the speed. They've got really good players, veterans on defense coming back for Timmy Chang. I think that's a team that certainly will be in the mix. And I think all three of those teams will have some say as to which group of six team gets into the college football playoff. I wouldn't bet against any of those three. And then the two that you kind of pencil in as these could be contenders, North Dakota State, hard to argue with their program and their culture. They'll be in it. And then Air Force, for all the reasons we identified. I think those are the five top teams, but I think UNLV looking at the top, until someone knocks them off that pedestal, I'm not betting against the Rebels.
Jesse, last 90 seconds, focusing on the Bison really quickly. Do you buy what they're trying to do here? Lost a lot of transfer talent into the portal. They're kind of promoting internally. Does that translate to the Mountain West?
I think it does because, one, I think culture speaks very loudly in college athletics. There is an expectation to win. There is a know how to win. And obviously across the board, they're stepping up the level of competition. There's no question about that. But if you look at what they've done with the type of talent that they've had, they're 9-5 all time against FBS programs. Why can't they continue to have success? They're not going to go 12-0, but can they be 8-4? Sure. Can they be 7-5? You bet. So the culture that Tim Polasek has continued after, what Craig Bull started there, I think there's an expectation of the type of players that they need to win there, and they've shown that they can beat high-level competition at the FBS level. So I think absolutely. Nathan Hayes is a quarterback that looks the part, 6'3", 220 pounds. He can run. He throws the ball very well. He has learned from some really good players. So I don't think that there's any question that North Dakota State will fit right in at the FBS level. And look out, in year one, if they are a 7 or 8-win season, if that's the floor for them, then they'll project to be a very heavy hitter, nationally speaking, at the FBS level, like the folks in the Mountain West projected they would be and thought that they would be a great fit for this league.
Jess, you're as good as it gets in this business, my friend. We're up against it. Thank you so much. And maybe it's a blessing we don't have more time because I don't need you to tell anybody what a fool I was when I was your employee for years. Jesse Kurtz, everybody, Mountain West Network. Make sure you check it all out. Follow him as well at @jkurtz_MWN.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Bethan Montoble, Stormy Bonantoni with you back here on Money Moves. We're going to keep the college football talk rolling here, but real quickly, did want to make note of that win total for the Air Force Falcons because I
She's
know
in.
JVT, you obviously have written up the Mountain West. You were high on this team. You can find the win total for Air Force at 6.5 or 7.5, but the plus 120 on that over 7.5 is very tempting. Very tempting.
And you're easily influenced. Much like I was back in my youth, and currently as an adult still am.
Your whole
when it comes to nefarious
year
items.
Older than me has made you that much more wise.
I mean, no, I caved the pressure quite easily, especially back in the day. We won't talk about what I came to, but either way, you're
in. I know Brad Powers talked about this Air Force team on the College Football Betting Podcast a few weeks ago.
He
took their over 6.5.
As succulent a tale as I did.
Said they could be a little bit of a sleeper as well. Didn't go as in detail as you and Jesse did there, obviously. Yep. But, you know, the more support I see, I can see it. I can understand the argument. The conference win total sitting at 4.5. I probably would stay away from them to win the conference at plus 550 make the Mountain West title game plus 230.
We've seen an
angle there.
Shift in those odds, too, by the way. Both Air Force and Hawaii were sitting at about 6-1 at multiple books. We're starting to see that shift. We're also starting to see some of the market, and I know Paul Howard feels like this because I was on the back end reading some of our best bets from some of our colleagues. By the way, due tonight. Have you written yours up yet?
I have not.
Come on now.
Today's the day.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
I'm queen of the last day. I've got till 9 o'clock.
By the way, I like how I'm lecturing you. My deadline for all of my college football stuff was Friday. I turned the last one in on Monday. But I'm important. I can get past deadlines like that. Either way, that's going to be a write-up for me. And the whole point here being is we're starting to see North Dakota State dip down a little bit and other teams start to rise in the odds. And the reason why I brought up the back end of our best bets, I know Paul Howard, reading some of his stuff before the guide came out, he does like North Dakota State to fall short of some of the market expectations as well. And so I think
I said that yesterday on the show,
But so the whole point here being is that I think that opens the door for the teams behind them. Hawaii, Air Force, from an odds perspective, should probably be a little bit shorter and thus creating some value.
Yeah, I think especially looking at North Dakota State's schedule, 8-4 seems like the most likely outcome, in my opinion, based on what I think of them. But again, this college football betting guide will be out next week. So if you are a VSiN Pro subscriber, you'll just get that as an automatic download. You'll also get the NFL betting guide. But our football season special is coming to an end soon. So if you do want to join us on that full-time basis, head over to VSiN.com/subscribe now. Make sure you can get in there for the $175 rate before it goes up. But that does get you unlimited access to everything that we do at the network, which is the daily best bets, the betting splits data, the AI-powered prop tools, video, everything. Again, VSiN.com/subscribe. But we do need to roll along here with our college football top 25 reveal for Money Moves coming in at number 7. Let's roll it.
This is the Money Moves College Football Top 25 Rankings.
We are on to, as I said, number 7, the Miami Hurricanes come off a national championship runner-up a season ago at minus 136 favorites in the ACC. They're the biggest favorite among all of the Power Four conferences. Darian Mensa comes over as well from the ACC champion, Duke Blue Devils.
Correct.
A team that we brought up briefly with Adam Burke, who did so much work on the VSiN college football betting guide. He wrote up the ACC and said for as much as he likes about this Miami Hurricanes team, his one concern was what they lost on defense. Gone is Hakeem Mesidor, gone is Desmond Bain. But like looking through what they brought back, JVT, a pretty stacked portal class, including Damien Wilson from Missouri. Cristobal, we know, is an excellent recruiter, and they were able to retain their defensive coordinator, Corey Heatherman, who was a finalist for the Broyles Award as the top assistant in football. So what say you about Miami in 2026?
They stink. They're going to be awful, and I'm not just saying that.
And that's why we co-ranked them at number 7 in the country.
Miami Hurricanes superfan Dustin Sweetelson is in the back because he irritated me earlier. No, I think they're going to be obviously very good. And I would say this. I think Adam Burke is both right and wrong about his point on the defense. I think you're obviously going to be concerned about losing the talent that they are. Having said that, I think with the addition of Mensa, this offense is going to be so much more explosive that the whatever minimal step back that you take on defense will be negated by how much better your offense is going to be, if that makes sense.
Sure.
You know, you're going to be able to generate explosive plays now, I think, with a little bit more frequency. You're going to be able to score more points. You're going to be more efficient offense, less time for your defense, less work that it has to do, working more with leads as well. Not that they were, you know, scuffling last year, but I think the whole point is the balance that this brings. Carson Beck and Miami were fine last year, but I think Mensa is going to lock a ton. Tony is always open and absolutely fantastic. I believe they bring a kid from Duke as well that's going to help them out in the receiver corps as well, so there's that continuity that they're going to bring to the table. So I think the fact that this offense is just going to be better and more explosive, does offset some of the losses that they have suffered defensively.
I mean, you mentioned the guy that he brings over from Duke, Cooper Barkate, was his top receiver at Duke, had a 1,000-yard season. That's your number two now, which is crazy. And you talk about Malachi Toney being fantastic and that he's always open. He never drops anything either. He didn't have a single drop on 141 targets last year. Like, they're going to be really, really fun offensively, I think. And the fact that you're getting a very clear upgrade in Darian Mensah from a post-surgery Carson Beck, remember that element of it too. And we thought there were a few games for as well as Beck played that he was holding them back.
Noodle arm.
To be able to have a 4,000-yard passer and one of the top touchdown getters in all of college football a year ago, like, there's a lot of reason to be excitement for Miami.
You know, there was a serious elbow injury for Carson Beck, and there are certain quarterbacks coming back from elbow injuries
that you're
very high on.
I'm telling you, it's going to be the rookie of the year arm. It's what it's going to be. But
Rowan Gardner, is that what it is?
I think, does that sound right?
Yeah. I never saw the movie, so I don't know.
You really didn't?
Nor do I care.
You're so sad.
I've never seen Hoosiers either.
Why don't you like fun things ever? Everything is always so negative with you.
That was a segue.
But, Mike, I can't do that, though, because I do have one more question. It's similar to what I asked Adam. Like, what do you think about this team when it comes to the conference? Oh. Because on paper, it seems like, okay, yeah, Miami should run through this conference, but they always lose the obvious games.
Yeah, dog, I'm in there like swimwear. Like, I think this team's going to be absolutely fantastic. I think you can make the argument that it's worth even laying the price. I mean, the schedule works out for them. Yeah, they got to go to Clemson, and I think the argument is sound that they're going to be better, Clemson, and then the road game at Notre Dame is going to be difficult too. But I do think this team... I'm kind of, as you can tell, in on the offensive production here. And I think it's going to be a lot better than what it was last year. And that offense still managed to get its way into a national championship game. And I think that's going to be a really good thing to watch with this team. The explosivity is going to be great. So, yeah, give it to me here for them to win the ACC.
Okay, let's go to Indiana. One of the great stories in all of college sports last year, before Kurt Cignetti arrived in Bloomington, Indiana had never had double digit wins in a season. They were the losingest program in all of college football. They have now had back-to-back double digit win seasons. They're 27-2 the last couple years, best in the sport, and fresh off an undefeated 16-0 season, Big Ten, Rose Bowl, and national champions. Yet when you look at the conference where things sit right now, they are not the favorite. They're the third shot on the board. They, in terms of a national championship, aren't being spoken about in the same way, which I know, having watched Kurt Cignetti the last few years, I'm sure he is reveling in that people don't have them as the pick to repeat. How do you see Indiana showing up this year?
Yeah, the utter disrespect that they're just the third choice on the board, right?
In their own conference after being the national champions.
Nobody believed
in us. I'm telling you.
I can't wait till they win again.
Cignetti's going to find a way to use it. I'm telling you.
They picked us to finish 7-1. What did Georgia do that one year? So many people were saying we're going to finish 8-4. Nobody said that. Look, we know what this is. We know what I'm going to bring up here. Again, it goes back to, can he continue to work his magic? I have some doubts about the turnover machine that has been Josh Hoover throughout his career. You look at it for the entirety of his career, turnover with a play rate of 3.8%. It's gotten progressively worse. Last season at TCU, over the course of 455 dropbacks, committed 21 turnover worthy plays for a rate of just over 4.4%. The dude puts the ball in danger, and I think that that is something that is inherent with what he does and how he plays the game. And I don't know if Cignetti coaches that out of him to an extent. Again, you know, I'm painting this very dire. It's not like I think they're going to go like 3-9 or anything like that. But if we're talking about the difference between winning a national championship, winning the Big Ten, when there's so many elite competitors with you, I think Hoover could be that difference in a negative way for Indiana. I think you like everything coming back for the most part. I think you're very confident. I think there's some questions potentially about the defensive line room. But I think this group is going to be pretty solid. And I think that they're going to be up there to compete for this Big Ten once again. I don't think that's saying anything. I just think you're getting in a high leverage game. And the game is on Hoover's shoulders, and he's got to go get it done. I don't think it would be surprising to see a back-breaking turnover, because that has been kind of his MO.
To put some numbers to that, in 31 starts, 33 picks, 9 lost fumbles, 13 interceptions last year, and 12 games were the most in the Big 12. But like I mentioned to you earlier, I think a huge reason for belief those numbers can go down, in addition to just the simple handicap of experience, are Indiana's going to run the ball. Even with Fernando Mendoza, they ran the ball 60% of the time versus TCU, where they were passing for 60% of their offense. offense. He's the most productive returning FBS passer for his career in college football, 3,500 yards last year, 4,000 the year prior, and he's got some upgraded weapons here, obviously. Michigan State transfer Nick Marsh comes over. Charlie Becker is back after a breakout season. And a schedule that doesn't have Oregon on it. You do have to face Ohio State, but you get them at home. At Michigan is going to be a tough one, and you host USC. A very tough stretch facing three of the four top teams in the conference in a month. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, this is a schedule that you're going to be able to handle business against, you would imagine.
Except for – oh, wait, no, they don't play Penn State. I was going to say, except for Penn State. you're so high on that Penn State team.
I'm not so high on Penn State, but I like Rocco Becht, and they have a really easy schedule. You can't deny that.
Road games against Michigan and Washington will be pretty tough, especially after hosting USC. Make that cross-country
trip. That's why I said that there is a – that month ain't easy, for
and
sure.
Barry Odom's going to have something for you at the end of the year, brother.
We got to step aside here on Money Moves. It's already almost time to be done. One segment remaining. Keep it locked right here. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We'll be back in a flash.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
So JVT mentioned it already. He has been, I don't know what the right word is. I don't want to say angry, but you've been like irritated all day.
Yes, I have. Well, first off, you've been irritated with me and you don't want to admit it. You got mad this morning because when I saw you, I didn't say, oh, you look so nice today, Stormy.
You said, and I quote, why do you look like that? You know, how am I supposed to take that?
You're sitting in your car and you roll down your window and you have tinted windows so I can't see you. And I was taken aback. So I just asked, why do you look like
that? I just wore a little bit more makeup than usual today and JVT can't figure it out. It's for television.
And right? Those are like not your real eyelashes.
Yes, I have fake eyelashes on today.
Okay,
I was taken aback by this.
I was like, what is this? So there's a local establishment out here in Las Vegas. We will not name names because I'm open at any price for any sort of advertising. But there is a new, what's the word I'm looking for, attraction in town that I would like to go to. And I was going to take the kids to it. You were going to come.
I have invited myself to it.
You invited
yourself. It involves sugar.
Yes,
so naturally I needed to come.
And so you were like, yeah, you know, kill two birds with one stone. My kids aren't the birds. You're going to meet them. But you and your husband were going to come. We were going to check this out. So the whole point is I buy tickets on Sunday. And the way that this breaks down is you have to buy tickets for a certain hour that you go. So I bought tickets Sunday, purchased them. Money was sent. Transaction achieved. Trust me, I did my budget today. Like, the money's out of the freaking account. And we had to buy them for the hour. So I bought our tickets for the 3 o'clock hour, okay? I get an email yesterday saying, sorry, your time is sold out and you have to reschedule. Which immediately I'm like, yeah, I know it's sold out. I bought 5 of the dang tickets. Like, I have purchased them. What do you mean that I'm getting kicked to the side because they're sold out? So, okay, whatever. There was at the end some sort of like $10 to protect your ticket. So apparently if you buy priority tickets, then you get the time and then everybody else gets pushed to the side. Whatever. So then I'm like, well, let's change the time. They have a 2 o'clock available instead of a 3 o'clock. That sounds great. Let's do 2 o'clock. I click 2 o'clock. I hit reschedule. It takes me to a page where it says, cool, $30. And I'm like, what? I bought the tickets. I get moved off the tickets that I bought. Forced to reschedule and then told that I have to pay $30 extra.
Yeah, that's insane. You need to call. That's what I said. Just pick up the phone, call. That's going to solve your problem more than anything you're going to try to do online.
That's insane. But if they were to pay
me, ridiculous.
Then it's the best place ever. I'm just going to tell you that right now. I'll also say this. We did get somebody who tweeted at a Sigs Inside at Slip Arm about Hoover. Said his turnover-worthy player was so high because TCU was playing from behind every game. Indiana has an elite run game, elite defense, apples and oranges. He won't have to take as many chances in this new environment. I would disagree with really a strong thing here, which is it's apples and oranges. Turnover-worthy play rate is turnover-worthy play rate. It's the rate at which you put the ball in danger. You throw interceptable passes. Those are decision-making. I would not disagree with the sense of if they're running the ball and playing good defense and he is just pretty simple in what he has asked that you can cut into that turnover worthy play rate. But Josh Hoover is who he is. And if you've watched him play, he puts the ball in danger. So is there a reality in which he can get coached out of it? Sure. But I would not say it's apples and oranges. And I would absolutely say that he is a guy that could be really good because Cignetti has a very strong track record of developing quarterbacks and making them better, but he also could just have this penchant for turning the ball over and that ultimately kills him in the end. We'll see what happens. But I would disagree with the sense of it's apples and oranges. If you're a bad decision maker, you're a bad decision maker at times, and I think Hoover has been at that at points throughout his career.
And I'll also say there are so many names to potentially look at from a Heisman standpoint that he is not high on that list for me. Yet he's 13-1. Remember when Mendoza won it last year, he was more than a 60-1 shot. But because of what he did and Josh Hoover being now put into that system, he was what I think the number 5 player in the transfer portal this past offseason, that he's being priced as if he has already done these things that he has not done.
Yeah. And the last point I think I would disagree with too is being down and having to throw all the time does not correlate to having a high turnover worthy
player. Well, it's also the way, like, he is, I've used the term, gunslinger, throws into tight windows that he doesn't necessarily, and I don't want to say that he doesn't have the ability for, because he does.
Sure.
But it's the decisions that he makes in those moments are, like, a little bit slow. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit delayed. He's got the arm for it. It's a cannon. But there are things that he has to control and be a little bit wiser with the how and the where he's throwing it. That said, I guess we can stick with the Indiana theme here because the WNBA is back in action today.
You're excited.
I am, because this Fever game has me a little bit intrigued.
And you're
going to
watch
in Seattle.
Every second of it.
I'm going to. This is a national game today.
Mm-hmm.
8.5-point spread in favor of Indiana. And yes, the Storm enter this game with the worst record in the league. They're riding a 6-game losing streak, which is the longest active streak in the WNBA as well right now. But they've covered the spread in 5 of them. They've actually been one of the best cover teams in the league the last 2 months.
Yeah.
Since June 2nd, 3-16 straight up, 13-6 against the spread. And I know the Fever, like, their game has clicked again. And Caitlin Clark, it took a couple games coming back from the back injury for her to refine her stroke. But she certainly has. She's been unbelievable her last couple of games going into the break. I'm not really sure what to make of this, but I was tempted on Seattle at home in this spot getting 8.5.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the Fever. It's funny, the last time we talked about the Fever, and I think I did the,
they haven't really been great in the big favorite role,
and then they went out and they covered the number against the Connecticut Sun.
They won like 20.
They were 10.5-point favorites. They won 123-88. But in the previous outing, they were an 8.5-point favorite against the Seattle team, as you mentioned, and then they failed to cover that one. You can go down the list of the situations in which they have not covered somewhat big numbers as a favorite. So I would argue that I think you're in a pretty good spot if you wanted to go there. And if you wanted to ask the Storm not to snap the longest active losing streak in the WNBA, but at least stay inside of this number, would be somewhat fair coming off of a break in which you're well-rested and ready to go.
Yeah, that game that you mentioned from a couple weeks ago where this was the same spread in favor of Indiana, only won by 3 in that spot. And looking at what Indiana does best, we know they're a very efficient offense. They can shoot the 3-ball. One area of success that the Storm have actually had for all of their shortcomings is holding opponents to 30% from 3. Their perimeter defense has been really solid. So I didn't end up playing anything. I don't have any best bets for today, but I was certainly contemplating taking the points with Seattle. Anything in Major League Baseball for you?
Yeah, buddy. Let's talk about
it.
All right, let's go to the Boston Red Sox taking on the, as I call them, the Sacramento Athletics. Interesting start here coming up for the Athletics. So if you remember, we had talked about the wonderful start to his career for one Gage Jump. Comes up from AAA, from the Aviators, and we had talked about this with Adam quite a bit, which was like, man, like, he is doing things that he did not do at the minor league level, including just keeping the ball in the ballpark, which was a really big problem for him. Then he had a home start against the Los Angeles Dodgers, Stormy, and you were thinking, well, if this is going to expire at any point, it's probably against this Dodgers team, who is very good. And to use his last name as a joke here, oh boy, has his ERA jumped quite a bit since that start. He goes out, he gives up 5 earned runs against the Dodgers in a beatdown over 4 2/3. From that start onward, an 8.31 ERA, a 6.31 expected. He's been getting knocked around. Command is starting to waver as well. He had a pretty decent command at the start of his major league career, but since then, he's walking guys at a pretty high rate, just about 4.6 walks every 9 innings. He's balancing out relatively well, still striking out guys, but this has really turned sideways for Gage Jump, not like it was at the beginning of his tenure in the majors. So you get on the other side, Jake Bennett, who's going to oppose him here. 10 starts, 59 in the third. Bennett's been pretty solid, really across the board, part of this resurgence that we have seen from the Boston Red Sox in terms of their pitching carrying the water. So do wonder if this is going to get ugly for the Athletics. We've talked about the injuries that they have suffered, how the lineup is getting thinner. Now Jump is not performing as well. And maybe it might be worth looking at a Boston Red Sox -1.5 here tonight against the Athletics and Gage Jump, considering how poorly he has been pitching.
I wonder how much they play Make You Wanna Jump, Jump, something like that for him, getting it going.
Mock his family
maybe.
Name like that?
No, it's beautiful. If anything, I'm celebrating it. What are you talking about?
I'm like 30 seconds removed from mocking it myself.
Elsewhere.
That's the comeback.
Have you let out your aggression about the Mariners yet?
Oh, no, we haven't talked about this yet. So I put that in the rundown. This team sucks, dude. I'm sorry. I'm done. And I know our producer, Justin, agrees. And I wonder if baseball savant Dustin Swedelson, who's coming up next on Money Moves. I'm so sick of, because you'll hear this, these analytics nerds who totally need to get their heads shoved in the toilet at some point here. I'm tired of hearing about this pitching staff. I'm tired of hearing about this potentially the best team in the American League. They lose again yesterday to the Texas Rangers. They're 5-11 in their last 16 games. You go back to June 3rd, they're 19-26. Over that span, this lineup, I mean, they're hitting with pool noodles out there. They stink. 28th in weighted runs created plus, 30th in weighted on base average, 22nd in walk rate. They're not patient. They can't get on in any way, shape, or form. They're 19th, 20th in strikeout rate. They're awful. Now, the pitching staff is fine, and I will give them some credit in that they're 10th in starter ERA over this same span, 15th in bullpen ERA. But I am so sick of hearing about the potential of this team. And I will say the same thing I did last year, and they actually did it last year. I stated that it would be an absolute and abject failure if they did not get Eugenio Suarez and add it to this lineup because they desperately need it because they were squandering that stupid pitching staff. And again, go get a bat. Your team stinks. The AOS sucks. And you're sitting here playing sub-500 baseball and wasting all of our time. If they don't do anything at the trade deadline, get rid of everybody in the entire front office, sell the franchise, and move it to Topeka. I don't care. I'm tired of hearing about this team.
Tell me how you really feel. Justin, clip that for reusable moments today. I think that might be the money clip of the day here. George Kirby yesterday, didn't he give up 7 homers?
Seven home runs.
4 home runs, not ideal. You mentioned it, though. Dustin Swedelson coming up next here alongside Mitch Moss for Follow
Summer
the Money.
Summer of Swede.
And your VSiN primetime crew today a little bit later on in the evening, Femi Abebefe and Will Hill. We've got you locked and loaded all day, every day right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Back tomorrow, same time, same place.